album and a CD and video.
Streaming in this realm and beyond, you're listening to Paranormal Investigator Radio with your hosts, Peter Leonard, Rich Nicodem, and Dr. David DeProspero.
Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for tuning in for another episode of Paranormal Investigator Radio. We are your hosts. I'm Dr. Dave DeProspero.
I'm Leader Pennard.
Dyslexic night, Pete.
And I'm Rich Nicodem.
Hope everybody's having a great night out there. Over here in central New York tonight, we have another drizzly evening. We've had some flooding for the past couple weeks, but we have a whole list of topics to talk to you about tonight regarding the paranormal, some equipment, some event reviews, and a whole bunch more, so stay with us.
Phone lines are now open. In North America, call toll-free 1-888-429-5471. International callers, please dial area code 530-763-1594.
Has it been 2 weeks already?
Wow. It's been 2 weeks.
It has.
Time flies when you're having fun.
Well, the Halbert event has come and gone.
It has.
I can say that I had a very good time. Whoever hooked me on that apple beer, I'm going to get even with you. It was a very good time. I know that wasn't the kind of spirits we were looking for, but...
Well, what are you going to do? You know, that's what you get when you have a fun event in a venue like the Halbert House with a lot of people that are there to have a good time.
I mean, barring the weather and Noah coming by in his ark, I mean, it ended up being a good event. We did sell out the 45 tickets, I believe,
yep.
So it was a good time.
3 days of lectures, investigations, fun and hijinks with Rip Crew, and of course John Zaffis. How could it be anything else but a good time?
In contrast, it was a lot different than last year. I think the method that we used this year for the event was much better. I think the people who attended got more bang for their buck this year. Compared to last year, when we pretty much turned away 78 people the night of the event, and we took all 125 people on a ghost hunt, which was a little crazy, but we organized it, and it worked. But I think this year, with the smaller turnout of 45 people and the way we structured everything, I think the people who attended got so much more out of it. And looking on the Facebook page, there's all kinds of reviews on there. I've received numerous emails from people thanking us. It was a great event. Even had a girl email today saying that she misses us already and can't wait to come to the next RIP event.
Oh, we're a lot to miss, Rich.
I know.
It's quite a group.
When Mike was on the bar dancing, singing Irish songs at 12 o'clock Friday night, that was something to be seen.
Well, the component I think a lot of people enjoyed this year was the socializing at the bar. I mean, that was kind of fun. John Zaffis hung out with everybody, and we all kicked back, had a couple cocktails, talked about ghosts and other things like that, and everyone really had a good time, especially when all that Red's apple cider was flowing through everybody.
Yeah.
Angry Orchard apple cider. That stuff was good.
They had the best beer tap head I've ever seen.
That was awesome.
It's always amazing when you kick a keg in a two-day period.
Now, let's chat about the investigations, though. I mean, we had nonstop investigations over 3 days on every single level of that building, from the basement up to the attic, and stuff happened on every single level. Daytime, morning, nighttime, overnight.
And that's what I think our guests actually enjoyed, was it was a nonstop paranormal hunting. It's not like a lot of these other events you go to. It's just a lecture here, a lecture there, quick 2 hours. I mean, from the time they got there, I mean, Friday afternoon, groups were like, can we go upstairs? Can we go downstairs? We're like, sure, Kevin.
Yeah, we let them investigate on their own so they could try out their equipment and kind of get familiar with the layout of the Halbert House. And then we did the whole group investigation Saturday night with John Zaffis. And then when we broke down, I went to the bar. After the bar, more people went back up and investigated, which was interesting, to about 4 o'clock in the morning.
Then,
of course,
state laws.
Yeah,
there was some hardcore people investigating.
Definitely.
I mean, they went till the wee hours of the morning till the sun came up.
They are definitely true paranormal investigators in training.
And then we started our events not much after that. I mean, breakfast started at 8 o'clock, so some of those people didn't get any sleep.
Well, then we wrapped up. Pete took a group up to the third floor and did another investigation. So, yeah, it was 3 days of investigating, and everything, the evidence kind of went from EVPs to someone seeing an apparition to people feeling, experiencing stuff for the very first time to a full-on deliverance, which we'll talk more of during the show.
That was crazy.
Yeah, I was going to say we need to talk about that because that was something even I've never been a part of.
Yeah, let's save that for later on in the show. We'll save the good stuff for later. So we have quite a bit of news, and tonight I think we'll have a quick little discussion about audio recorders because that topic came up a lot over the weekend. People just weren't sure what to look for in an audio recorder, why certain recorders get better results than others. So we're going to have a little tech talk about that.
I can tell you one thing you don't ever want is a reel-to-reel tape recorder. We learned that.
Oh, my goodness. The sound that comes from the motor whirling that reel will contaminate every audio recorder that you have. Yeah, those were in the bad old days when we first started the group.
That was the cowbells and tapes back then.
But, you know, certain TV shows actually still have the cowbells that they're trying again. Back to those old analog methods.
I actually found our cowbells. I think
you still
we should
have
use them?
Them again. Jeez. Hey, stay with us. We'll be right back.
Paranormal Investigator Radio on BBSRadio.com.
Well, we are back. Welcome, everybody, to Tuesday night and spending your Tuesday evening with us here on Paranormal Investigator Radio. It's a sad day in Rich's life today. As I found out through the Internet, of course, everything that's on the Internet is always true. And Pete told me that.
Internet, it is.
Pete.
It is.
Ladies and gentlemen, Bigfoot is a hoax.
Oh, come on.
Now, I don't want to believe it because I'm, like, the biggest Bigfoot fan. I watch all the Bigfoot shows and, I mean, we were actually talking about starting up a semi-division of RIP that was dedicated to Bigfoot. So trust me, I'm very disappointed. But of course, you know, if you've been following Bigfoot as many years as I have, you have to kind of look through everything. The hoaxes along with the real hard data that they can't dismiss as something that's paranormal related or some kind of a species of animal they have not identified yet. But there is a veterinarian. This is a story that you can find online. It's at news.softpedia.com, and it's titled Bigfoot Studies a Hoax. DNA belongs to a possum.
Oh, jeepers.
Now, I'm not sure how you could mess up a possum DNA with Bigfoot DNA or how they are trying to pull that off, but there's a veterinarian that is aiming to convince the world that Bigfoot is real, but he has been proved wrong by DNA examination. So this has been posted all around the Internet, that before they actually did the DNA analysis that somebody had actually collected DNA evidence of Bigfoot. So, folks, sorry to disappoint you. According to what the Internet's telling us, it's all a hoax. It's just a big, hairy, six-foot-tall, angry possum.
I think you just described me.
Where do they make possums that big?
No, not in New York, I can tell you that.
That's crazy.
I will tell you, though, when I went to Phenomenology over there in Gettysburg, there was a group that does do squatching.
I love that squatch. Gone squatching.
Kind of squatching.
And they did have castings laid out on the table of different footprints. And I mean,
that would be really cool to see.
Yeah.
How do you really explain that? I mean, that's something must be out there.
Well, I watched Finding Bigfoot, and one of the investigators there, Cliff, who's the analyst of the group, based out of Oregon, did an investigation where they actually cast, I think, over 73 prints up one trail on the side of a lake of Bigfoot, which is amazing. Usually you find a couple prints in the woods next to a stream, but this was 72 or 73 tracks that they were able to cast. So unless somebody's really got it down to science on how to pull this stuff over people,
boy.
I mean, where do you, it's like the paranormal, where do you like kind of draw the line and where do you go to skepticism versus being a believer,
well,
you know?
We have an area in New York called Whitehall, and that's like the Bigfoot Central of New York State. There's been hundreds of reports from that area.
It's around Lake, ladies and gentlemen, around Lake George near Vermont, correct?
Yeah.
Near the border?
Is it?
I think it's in the Hudson, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it's down south, the southern tier.
Yes, we are from New York.
Yeah, we do live here.
I ain't never here to know Whitehall.
Yeah, no. There's Whitehall is the hub of alleged Sasquatch activity.
It connects to the White House.
Does it?
Yes, the Whitehall.
Whitehall? Goes to White House? That was terrible. Don't listen to Pete.
Sorry, man.
So we do have some kind of a connection to Bigfoot. And, you know, I always say that you can't be so quick to dismiss the unexplained, like UFOs. I'm not a huge believer in UFOs, but there's a gigantic following, especially here in central New York, of, you know, the UFO sighting crews. And likewise, there's teams that do the Sasquatch hunting and whatnot. And you can't believe in one aspect of the paranormal and solidly dismiss the others. You have to keep the open mind to all of that stuff. So, you know, that's my two cents on it.
And it takes one of these hoaxes, which actually Bigfoot has been surrounded in hoaxes since its inception back, what, in the late 70s? Is that when that started?
Not as many as the Loch Ness Monster.
Actually, they said they disproved that, too, last week. I remember reading something about that.
Oh, nasty.
Something to do with some kind of volcanic thing, gas causes something, I don't know. If that's the case, I got a Loch Ness Monster upstairs. Oh! But no, I mean, having seen those footprints, I mean, they're literally about the size of the laptop we're using here. So, I mean, it's not a small
footprint. Yeah, they're big footprints. Has anybody seen that new show called Siberia?
No.
Okay, it's supposed to be like a reality show where these 12 or 14 people are brought to Siberia, left, and told to survive. And at first glance, it appears to be a reality TV show. But the more I watch it, the more I think it's a staged, you know, an actual, not sitcom, but docudrama type show, I guess. And last night, they showed that one of the contestants, was killed. And they showed a track, and the track was like 18 inches long. And they think that it's some kind of cryptid. So I
can debunk that right now for you. It's probably actually not a debunk, because as soon as you said Siberia, one of our team members, something Vinny told me.
Oh boy, what'd he say?
A while back, is that the actual entrance to hell is in Siberia.
What the heck?
And if you go on YouTube, they actually have videos of sound recordings coming from hell of people screaming. And
yeah,
and
they,
he played one for me.
Yeah, that was on, what is it? What's that show, radio show that's late at night? That
Coast to Coast?
Yes, thank you. George Norrie, yes. So
where in Siberia?
I don't know. Is Siberia a big place?
It's a good size.
Bigger than New York.
I actually met a guy last week who
I'm happy for you.
He's from Russia. He's an older gentleman. Rush. And he was sent to Siberia, you know, as part of his missions. He was in the gulag out there, and he was...
I love goulash.
Goulash is good.
We can't forget the Tunguska blast of 1918 or 17 or whenever that was. That gigantic thing that came down, smashed in, and blew up all them trees.
I don't know what you're talking about.
What? The Tunguska explosion?
Tunguska?
And just for you, for our listening audience,
Rich
to let you know,
up over here.
I did pull up a map of Whitehall, New York, just to find where it is, and my original statement about being close to the Vermont border was correct.
Okay, it's up.
It's north of Queensbury, Glens Falls, across from I-87, south of Ticonderoga, just west of the Adirondack Mountains, or east, I'm sorry, the Adirondack Mountains.
Well, I'll be. That must have been where I was lost when the Google map system went down and I couldn't get any reception and we were just driving around random lakes.
That could be it.
Good thing I didn't run into him. He would have thought I was family seeing all the arm hair on.
Boy, oh boy. 7 feet tall, full of hair.
So now I got to look up the Tunguska blast, huh?
Okay, yeah, we could do that.
Dear Lord.
Anyways, not that we're trying to get off subject here.
Yeah, seriously.
So what's up with you? You lit the fire, UFOs. What are all these sightings over Denver lately?
Okay, so this is something else that Eric, one of our team members, had mentioned. He said that there's a Stargate that's located in Denver. Rich, what is a Stargate?
It was a TV series I used to watch. I think it was on Fox or something.
It was on the Sci-Fi Channel.
Was it Sci-Fi? See, it shows how much I watched it.
MacGyver was on Stargate.
But actually, on Facebook, I've seen quite a few people that were at some fireworks display over Denver on July 4th, and they were watching objects through the sky. I believe there's actually a post on Chris's page about that.
Chris Moon. So, Pete, what is a Stargate? What's the actual definition of a Stargate?
It's a portal device within the Stargate fictional universe that allows practical rapid travel.
Not fictional, no. We need the nonfiction version.
Okay.
All I can tell you is an Estes Colorado is the Estes Model Rocket Company, which I'm a fifth level rocketeer since the 90s.
Well, a Stargate is a series of devices built by the ancients. They were creating artificial subspace wormholes to allow for near instantaneous transportation between. That is your official definition.
So it's a wormhole?
Okay, so yeah, it's a...
Of sorts.
It's a device that creates a wormhole to some far-off planet. Okay, so there's apparently UFOs over Denver.
But actually, other than the July 4th, I mean, there's been sightings from May, June,
April. Is anybody out there listening from Colorado? If you're listening, please feel free to contact us and let us know what the deal is with the UFOs over your state.
If you have questions, news, requests, new technology you would like us to review, team updates, event updates, or if you would like to be a guest on our show, email us at submit@paranormalinvestigatorradio.com.
We would really like to hear from anybody out there who has any reports of active UFO sightings, any Sasquatch sightings, any cryptid sightings, alien sightings, any kind of unusual encounters out there.
And if you're an alien, we do have someone who speaks Sumerian on the team, so
that's right.
Give
We'd
us
like
a
to
call
hear from
too.
You too. So what else do we have, gents?
Sagudunu.
What?
Hello in Sumerian.
Oh. God bless you.
Just in case, you never know. We seem to attract everything else in the paranormal world. Why not aliens?
That's true.
As long as they're not the kind looking for gardening work. I got a kid who does that.
Go ahead, Rich.
As long as their name is not Elf, I'm cool with it. So,
Elf rule.
So anyways, let's talk a little bit real quickly about the Holbrookcon event and the investigation part of it for a couple minutes. And then in the latter part of the show, we'll go into detail about the whole deliverance and everyone's input on that. Though I think the three of us had limited input, but we did witness it.
We were kind of...
We were told not to go in.
It was a female only. We'll talk about that later.
So when we first started, I mentioned a couple things that happened during the investigation. And one was an actual apparition. A story was told to me by one of the guests that was there that was coming up from the second floor to go to the third floor to do an investigation. He had all his gear with him. And as he came up the stairs, there was a couple chairs right there in front of the door to the third floor. And he said there was an elderly woman sitting there in the chair with a long silver gown. She said hello. He said hello back and smiled. And he went up onto the third floor. Shortly behind him was another gentleman that was with him. And he just went up to the third floor. And when he got there, the first guy said, "Did you say hello to the lady down there? Who is she?" And he was like, "What are you talking about? There's no lady down there." So they came down and they were looking for us, and they asked us if we knew of a woman that was here, an elderly woman with a silver gown. Of course, there wasn't. I mean, the place was closed down for us. There was no elderly woman that was there. So that still kind of remains a mystery to me. So unless there was one walking around there that was trying to play a trick on us, which
would
be
a common story, though,
quite clever.
There's a man and a woman that used to play bridge at that chair. There was a chair, two chairs and a table right at the top of those stairs. They used to spend their days sitting in those chairs, chatting and playing bridge, and there's been sightings of both the man and the woman up there for many, many years.
Well, there you go. Kind of goes hand in hand with that. That same night during the investigation up on the third floor, we had a couple different teams up there. Two of our guests had a couple interesting new toys that I thought were kind of cool. One was an actual Raggedy Ann doll.
Yes.
That had some sensors built into it.
K2 meter
built inside of it. And as they were doing an EVP session in the hallway with the doll, it was responding or triggering to questions by touching the doll, and the sensors would light up on it. which I thought was really kind of cool. So that's something we need to get our hands on.
Trigger objects.
And yes. I think I've seen one with a train. I've seen a few different toys that they've manipulated for kids to play with.
There's a car that I saw on eBay that's for sale that was a trigger device. And I actually saw a car that's actually an EMF pump also. So, which is kind of interesting. And it wasn't terribly expensive. So those are a couple things that went on the first night of investigation, which was Friday night.
I know we were shacked up in room 17, staying the night. When I woke up, there was every time I would get up and go to the bathroom, you know, all that cider, I'd come back to bed and there'd be Pringles all over the bed. I just couldn't explain that.
It was Mike.
No, he didn't stay over.
Oh, that's true.
I must have been diabetic phantom eating or something.
And you were in the room by yourself.
Yes, but I can tell you when we did wake up, the water was dripping. However, I'm not sure that that was paranormal.
That was probably Boonville Plumbing.
And I know that is one of the sightings there, is that the water faucet turns on. I'm not sure if that room, but...
No, it was across the hall.
Let's go back to the whole Pringles thing. Explain this to me a little bit more. I'm intrigued by this.
They were sour cream and cheddar. And they were just laying on top of the bed.
Was the can on the bed?
Which, I don't remember eating Pringles. I know I remember eating the bacon jerky, but not the Pringles.
That was actually good.
Folks, he had jerky, Pringles, ice cream sundaes,
hey, I was
chocolate chip
Scott.
Cookies.
And he's diabetic.
Yes, and he's diabetic.
I think it's very interesting to note that we had a meteorological phenomena happen inside the Hulbert House, too. It actually rained inside the Hulbert House briefly.
But when did this happen?
The bar started raining, the ceiling in the bar.
But
That was because a pipe burst in one of the bedrooms above, and there was water pouring out of the ceiling in the bar.
Well, Dave, describe what happened Saturday. When we were doing the main investigation, you would come down to the back room there. You said you'd seen something on the video upstairs?
Yeah, there was
something
a cloud.
Happening.
Yep, it was as if there was a cloud that went from the right-hand side to the left-hand side of the DVR screen above the heads of the people that were in a circle in the back banquet room.
Now, that was my group. That's when you came down and said you saw something on the DVR.
Yeah, I had asked if there was anything that anybody had experienced down there, and nobody had, but it looked like that a solid mist or fog in like a streamer-like shape floated above the heads of the people that were in the circle.
Well, that's that area that we were all encamped upon was where we believe is the portal.
Right.
When we were down there, you could feel there's a tremendous amount of energy there, and some of the other guests that I took along in the investigation who've never felt this kind of thing, they're kind of first-timers, actually felt it like, oh my God, I'm cold, all the hair's standing up on me. So they actually experienced that. And as we sat around there and we're doing a K2 session, we got a couple hits on the K2. A couple of the people there felt like they were touched. It was usually the girls felt like they got touched in the back or someone grabbed their hair. And that's when you came down and said that you saw something on the screen, which I still need to see that. I'm intrigued to see what that looks like.
And actually, after that, Pete, we were in the basement, and we had some unusual activity happen. There was about, six of us down there?
Yeah, before you would come down, the lady was getting consistent hits on the K2 meter with, we believe, a child. Now, the strange thing was there was a lady standing next to her with another K2 meter. Her K2 meter wasn't triggering.
Mm-hmm.
I put the newer black one that you'd developed there, excuse me, put that over the top of both of them, and that didn't even trigger, but hers was still triggering, and I found that to be very unusual. And I was actually moving around her, trying to feel where that force was coming from, triggering. And she didn't have the kind that you hold down with a quarter. She was actually
the switch,
the newer switch models.
And they were actually in contact with a young girl, as I recall, right?
Yeah, they kept saying the name was Mia, which will lead to the next thing. But you down there had seen a shadow for your first time, right?
Well, in the basement down there, yeah. I had our brand new HD night vision Sony system, and I was recording the group with it. And when I put the camera down, I was looking at Pete, who was across the basement, and I could have swore that I saw him in one location in the basement. And in actuality, he was much closer to me and on the right-hand side of the basement. So I told him, shine your flashlight back there, because it looked like a large person. Not that Pete is large, but, you know,
he's about
I'm an obese.
No, he's not obese. He's, you know, tall guy. And Pete shined his light back there, and there was nothing. He turned his light off, and suddenly somebody else jumped and said, no, wait, something bent over. And then I saw something bend over a short while after that, and it looked like there was just, you know, movement in the back corner over there. And then multiple people started seeing it, and once everybody was aware of what was happening, it became very clear that something was indeed actually moving back there.
And interesting about that, too, earlier in the day, the two Reiki ladies asked me to give them a tour of the Hallberg. I didn't tell them anything about any specific area. One of the areas where they freaked out was actually in the basement. When they got near the portal, the one told me, she's like, I'm sorry, Pete. She's like, I have to go right now. She's like, all of my body is telling me to just get out of here right now, which is an interesting feeling. And then the other thing was, she got a feeling upstairs in the hallway where she felt like a little child putting their arms around her waist. Mm-hmm. It actually really disturbed her for a while.
You know, what's interesting, and it's worth mentioning, is that most of the people during the investigation were women. And we got a ton of activity. Now, I say that because a lot of that we've been discussing is child spirits. And, you know, a lot of times when we've done the investigation as a group, and it's mainly been males, we've gotten evidence, but not like that. And then when the women do it with us, they seem to be the ones that are getting touched, and, you know, and it leads me to think that possibly there are child spirits there that are reaching out to women as if, you know, looking for their mothers or sisters.
But even
sisters.
With regard to the Hallberg House, Eileen, who's one of the owners there, she consistently has her own experiences, yet her husband only has experiences every so often. He's very aware that something is going on there, but his frequency of experiences aren't anywhere close to Eileen, and Eileen also has two daughters that stay up there. They experience things. They have a female friend, Lori, who stays up there with them quite often, and Lori is constantly experiencing weird things.
So we stay at the bar next time and let all the ladies investigate.
You know, any place where the ladies were, there was a lot of weird stuff that happened.
Well, I remember we talked about this porthole like last year when we basically did our investigation, and when we had John Zaffis there, and we also spoke with some psychics, and they said that there was a lot of spirits there, 30 to 40 possibly, and then we felt all that tremendous energy in that back ballroom. And we did a little experiment to see if it was downstairs. I remember that. I remember we put a chair. I went downstairs. Yeah. Dave sat next to the chair, and I went downstairs. And ironically, I shined my flashlight down, and there was this door laying on the ground, like a doorway to, you know, to go below. And I could feel the energy, and I'm like, Dave, I walk it up, pound on the floor right where the chair is. So he pounded on the floor, and dust hit me in the head. So he was, like, directly above me.
Mm-hmm.
It was really wild. And that's kind of funny that you took the Reiki ladies over there, Pete, and they ran from it. They're like, oh, my God.
And there's a mirror on the third floor that's said to also be a portal that connects down to the lower levels of the Hallberg House, too.
And the energy they described was exactly how we usually feel it, a very sharp electric pain up the spine, and it just kept getting worse and worse for them. And that was actually validation for us, because we knew that we've seen little children.
Oh, absolutely. We've caught them on audio.
I meant we've heard little children.
Yep.
I see children.
No, we've captured children's voices on audio.
Imagine if we went in there with some EMF pumps or ion generators to give that atmosphere a little boost. Do you think the quality of the EVPs would increase? You think we'd get better audio?
The spirit box stuff that I experienced that Saturday, this is the one after the deliverance. Couldn't get that out. I'm from there. You'd think I'd be able to.
Let's talk about the spirit box for a second. Now, for those of you listening, the spirit box is that AM/FM radio that scans through the frequencies very, very, very fast. You've heard me complain about it on numerous occasions, but Pete and Rich, they always get great stuff. I can never hear or understand what's coming out of the box, but upon playback of the recordings, you can actually hear where things are, you know, swearing takes place, names are called out.
This gentleman was a potty mouth. He was Italian American. I won't mention the name because he may still have family.
Very colorful
here.
Language. Yeah.
But I remember saying, "Where can I find a good card game?" And it was followed immediately by five deleted expletives of basically, "Why was I busting his chops?" It led to a couple other questions where there was chronic swearing. And then Alex asked the faded question. He's like, "Well, how many people did you kill with that garro?" And he came back immediately and said, "Four." And it was all in the same voice that kept answering throughout the night. So four people with the garro, either something really was busting our chops, or I don't know.
And it's, you know, the thing that lends a little bit of validation to that for me, which I've said before, is the swearing. Because you don't hear swearing on AM/FM radio. You just don't hear those words.
But the kicker for me was when I asked him the question, "What family were you with?" And he answered, "Malcone." Now, that's not a name you normally hear. The only reason I ever heard of that name was through our friend, Ed.
Okay, so you're mentioning a mafia family? Okay, that's what we're talking about
here. No, Ed's father was one of the prohibition officers who went through upstate New York enforcing prohibition. And that was actually the next question I asked to the Frank's box. I'm like, "Did Eddie bust your chops?" And it came back as clear as day, "It's just business." Meaning I'm the bad guy, he's the good guy, I gotta bust his chops, he busts my... The fact that he mentioned the two together, because the only place I ever heard of the Malcone name was through Ed's son. Now, Ed actually, being a historian himself, has been spending all week digging into news clippings, actually sent me a news clipping from 1930, where this Malcone, Rocco Malcone, and his son were gunned down in Frankfurt, because they were getting ready to basically expose another family to the feds.
Oh, boy.
A couple days later, they found a couple more of their crew in the Barge Canal strangled.
Holy cow.
So now you know, when we used to grow up, they used to say, "Shut up, we'll find you in the Barge Canal."
Yeah, well,
I guess
yes.
It was merit.
You know, I'm kind of mixed reviews on it. I mean, I was with Dave about the whole thing in the Frank's box. I mean, I would hear a lot of garbled stuff, and people say, it said yes. And I'm like, it didn't sound clear. You can interpret it. But the more I investigated, the more I used it, I started to get clear responses. Like when we did the one Woodgate investigation, I got back clear responses of how he died, what his favorite hobby was, where he liked to do it. And, I mean, it's clear as day, and they're all correct. And then when we did the Halbert House, especially in HalbertCon, with the Deliverance and some of the things that Pete did, clear answers were coming back that you couldn't mistake as just garbled interference or somebody trying to make something sound like, you know, it fits.
I'm not going to put words in the Godfather's mouth, but I think even he was amazed at what was going on there with the Frank's box. That was just a little too out.
Meaning
of the ordinary.
John Zaffis?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. John Zaffis left that event basically shaking his head, saying it was one of the most amazing things that he's experienced.
And that just wasn't David asking him questions during the dinner.
Yeah. I thought he was ready to punch Dave, but that's neither here nor there.
There was a dinner that we had, and John did a Q&A session with the audience, and I was eating a little bit later than the rest, and I like to be entertained when I eat. And nobody was asking any other questions, and I like to hear John talk. So I just kept asking questions, and he was getting annoyed, so I just kept asking more questions.
And they were basically like, in 1,400 words or less, describe the church's viewpoint on demonology from medieval times to the 1920s up to Vatican
II. I just wanted to make sure that, you know, he gave people their money's worth.
I've never seen him look at somebody like he looked at you. There was dead silence in that restaurant. You could hear a pin drop, and he just stared at you. I mean, granted, it was only a couple seconds, but it felt like 10 minutes of just very uncomfortable silence.
But he did answer all the questions. He was a good sport.
Was that his classic answer? You're lucky the room is full right now?
I've seen him go ballistic on people. It's not a pretty sight.
Oh, God.
Yeah, he's yelled at me a few times, so
he's
got off
guy.
Easy.
Paranormal Investigator Radio. Hosted by the Brown Investigators of the Paranormal. Visit us online at www.brownindustigatorsoftheparanormal.com.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we are going to have a quick little discussion here about audio recorders. It's very important in the paranormal field because about 99% of what you record during an investigation will be on your audio recorder. EVPs are one of the primary pieces of evidence that we in the paranormal field have to reference to try and get some validation to our questions and our investigation. It's exceedingly rare to get any type of video or photographic evidence. You don't just see, spirits floating by on command. You can't tell a spirit, show yourself, take a picture, and it'll be there. However, you can have an intelligent dialogue and at times receive answers. Of all the tools in the paranormal trade, the audio recorder is probably one of the most widely used and one of the most well-received, I guess, by both investigators and by spirits from the other side. There's very little hesitation to chat. So, really, an EVP is an electronic voice phenomenon. It's just an audio recording of a voice or a sound or a scream or something that we can't perceive with our ears at the time that we're investigating, but upon playback, it's there, imprinted in the audio file. So now let's chat about what some of the people have asked from this past weekend. People come to our events with a variety of audio recorders, most of them fairly low-end, I would say, or consumer grade that you would get at a super center or a drugstore, the ones that are probably less than $60-$70. The model that we use is the Tascam. We enjoy the Tascam brand of audio recorders. They all have 24-bit digital audio converters, and without getting into too much detail, the DAC or the digital audio converter is really what emulates the real world analog sound in a digital format. Analog is what we live in. It's back from the days of 8-tracks and audio record and audio cassettes. Those were technologies that would record pure, unadulterated sound. It was the sound that you hear is the sound that gets recorded. Now, in modern days, these digital audio recorders take the analog sounds that we hear in the environment around us, and they digitize them, and they make them as close to real life as they can. Now, the thing with the digital audio recorder is that they're very convenient. They give us flexibility. They allow us to adjust quality and sensitivity and recording duration, and at will we can scan through the recording, and just look for the bits and pieces that we need. We could convert them to files on our computers very simply and quickly, and it's just a much more user-friendly device. Also, as Pete mentioned earlier, you don't want to go around in your paranormal investigations with a reel-to-reel audio setup. Now, yes, it does record 100% analog, so you are getting 100% pure unadulterated sound. However, you're also getting all the mechanical sounds that go along with the tape. Pete's just giving me this look. Yeah, you hear it?
I was trying to make the noise.
You always hear that little oscillation.
The tape hiss,
yeah,
too.
The tape hiss, too.
Even with cassette recorders,
yeah.
And 8-tracks, you get that tape hiss. So even when the music or whatever's not playing, you can turn volume up, and it's just like, and that just kind of can interfere with anything you can actually pick up as an EVP.
8-tracks, did you go through a Stargate?
Oh, I did. That was a Stargate moment there, 8-tracks. But with these digital audio recorders, the level of quality that you can record is just staggering. It's far, far above CD quality audio.
Not to mention the microphones are extremely sensitive.
I was going to talk about the microphones in a second, but since you mentioned it, the microphones on the high-end audio recorders are of a very special variety that aligns perfectly to the specific circuitry that's in these high-end audio recorders. So not only do you have the high-end circuitry, the high-end operation, the microphones are also much, much higher quality than in the typical consumer grade.
You don't want to go to the bathroom anywhere near that.
No, you can hear stuff from many, many rooms away. If somebody's whispering 4 or 5 rooms away, you can easily hear their whispering when you, you know, play back the recording.
It's not demonic either. It's their stomach emptying.
Yeah, we've captured a number of gurgles and groans, and it's people's digestive systems from other rooms. But like I said, a lot of people this weekend asked about specifics. What should I look for when I buy an audio recorder? Well, unfortunately, you know, I can't say that any one brand has anything that another brand doesn't. We like to use Tascam. It's just a brand that's always worked well for us. But there's a lot of other high-end audio recorders out on the market. For example, Zoom, Z-O-O-M. That's another brand that has a very high quality. What you really need to look for is the highest DAC that you could find with regard to the audio recorder specs. And that's, again, the digital audio converter. Usually it's 24-bit. If you have a 24-bit DAC, you have a pretty good digital audio recorder. There are some out there that are higher than that. There's a whole lot of them out there that are a lot lower than that. But that's what's really going to set apart a good audio recorder. Now, there's a whole lot of other features that some of these digital audio recorders have that others don't. For example, these Tascams, they come with little remote controls, an infrared remote control. So from across the room, you could wirelessly start and stop recording, or you could use the remote control for playback. Also, it has stereo microphones on most of the high-end models, these Tascams. So through software, you could isolate the audio tracks from the right microphone and the left microphone. If you have an EVP that comes predominantly through one microphone and not the other, then you could pretty easily gauge directionality of where the EVP came from, for example, to the left-hand side of the microphone or to the right-hand side. Also, on the back of the Tascam, on this model, on most of the models, there is a little mounting hole so that you can mount it onto a tripod. And another really important feature of this is the line in and the microphone in, and also the outputs. The range of inputs and outputs that you have on these things is really important, because while the microphones are really, really good on these particular units, it's the circuitry inside that really sets it apart. So if you have a very, very high-quality microphone, we're talking microphones that are hundreds, if not thousands of dollars, like a gold beryllium microphone.
We're still looking for one of them.
Yeah, if anybody has a source of gold beryllium microphones, please let us know. You could plug that in, and you could do your recordings through that. Now, there's also... what was your diode, Pete, that you were talking about the other day?
Oh, yes.
Drawing a blank?
Yes. Germanium.
No, Radive.
Yeah.
That's it. Radive diode. There's a lot of different electronic components that you could plug into the line in or the microphone input of these audio recorders to do some really obscure testing. There's a lot of theories out there that you could just plug bare wires into the microphone's input and hold the bare wires to, like, limestone, for example, and you could get voices that come through the rock and are recorded on the audio recorder. The germanium diode, the Radive diode, those are also techniques to use, you know, that require a line in or a microphone in.
I guess I would say the tripod feature is the best, because this is so sensitive.
Yeah.
If you're rubbing it against your clothes or just normal movement,
even just
you'll
holding
be
it in your hand, yeah, you get sound from that. So if you could isolate this on a tripod in the middle of a room, you know, apart from your personal being, you have a much better opportunity of collecting some high-quality EVPs that you could rule out contamination from human contact.
I guess the only downfall is if you're going to buy one of the Tascams is to actually invest in the AC adapter, because that thing eats A batteries like I eat potato chips.
Yeah, they all pretty much take AA batteries, and we always suggest that people get rechargeable batteries whenever they use any kind of electronic devices in the field. Not only do we see that there's spontaneous battery drain on investigations, but just the consumption of batteries that are used by, you know, Melmeters and these high-quality audio recorders and just other devices in general. You know, you go through a lot of batteries.
people get all excited. Oh my God, my batteries just got drained. I'm over there screaming, that's $8.95.
I know, it's a $9 battery. But also, when you play back these recordings, if you play them back from the unit itself as opposed to downloading them to a computer, it's helpful to have that AC adapter.
And you know, too, a lot of times when you guys are doing the EVP sessions, I sit there with the headphones on, and I mean, it's incredibly deafening, but you can literally hear things probably hundreds of feet away being picked up.
Yeah, this particular brand, Tascam, has a live review function where you could plug headphones in, and you could hear through the headphones exactly what's being recorded at the time that it's being recorded. So you can hear EVPs as they're recorded. Live, so it really aids in your ability to have intelligent conversations and a dialogue back and forth. Now, the downfall is that the prices of these things are up there, a couple hundred dollars. But
it's worth the investment.
It's well worth the investment. Since so much of what we capture is on audio, the importance of a high-quality audio recorder can't be overstated. You really, really, really need to invest in a good quality audio recorder. Just some suggestions. If you're going to look for audio recorders, look for like studio recorders or performance recorders because those are recorders that are designed for field use for recording high-quality audio. We would highly, highly recommend that you stay away from Super Center audio recorders. They'll do the trick. They'll get you started. But if you're going to spend $50-$60 on one of those things, you might as well just save up for a few more weeks and get a good quality one. It'll last a lot longer, and you'll be much, much happier with the results.
Well, we have a few of the lower-end Tascams in our arsenal. I think we got them at, what, like $99?
Yeah, I've got...
And that's pretty much the same quality as the larger model, except it has much less features.
So. Yeah, all right. The one that we use mostly... I'll tell you the model. It's a Tascam DR2D. D as in David. DR2D. We're very, very happy with these audio recorders, and we have many of these in our group. There is a lower model that we also have a few of, and we set those out for static recording in rooms, and we keep these higher-end ones with us as we're investigating. But they all have the really high quality DAC, so
just don't cross the streams.
Regardless of the model, keep an eye out for that DAC, and the higher quality audio recorder you get, the better. You'll be happy with the results.
Visit us online. ParanormalInvestigatorRadio.com.
Well, I guess we kept him waiting long enough. Should we talk about that little deliverance thingy?
Yeah, we might as well talk about the deliverance.
Alex, myself, and David had about 6 people in the basement at that point.
Yeah.
And we actually, as David had mentioned, we had a lot of activity going on at that point. Shadows, the K2 meter, weird feelings. Then I believe somebody called that they wanted all the women to go upstairs. And we started going upstairs. We didn't really know what to expect. And all I remember is when I hit the stairs, I'm pretty sure I heard something like in a little child's voice saying, "I can see the light." I know as we walked towards the room, John was outside and he was basically saying he didn't want any men in the room, segregating out with just the woman. So I don't really know what led up to us being brought up there, but I believe they were talking with a spirit of a young girl.
The same girl that was found in the basement when we had seen the shadow.
Could be her. She's moving all about the Halbert house. Yeah, what prompted that was when John had the... When I took a group up to the third floor, as we were cycling through the groups, they were already in this Frank's box session speaking to this little child, and the child was responding to the women. When I walked into the room, all of a sudden the Frank's box let out like a yelp, like, and John's like, "Get out of the room, get out, you're scaring her." And I was just like, what, who am I scaring? You know, I didn't know what was going on. And he said, "All the men have to stay out and just the women." And he's like, Richie, go downstairs and get me more women. I'm like, okay, it's kind of an unusual request, but, you know, I've known John a long time. You know.
Well, he is a celebrity.
Yeah, so I went down and got more women. And as we brought them up, they all kind of created a circle, and they kind of held hands towards the end, and they were encouraging this young girl. The spirit, was it Mia?
Mia, I believe. They kept saying me, but yeah. I think the name was Mia.
They kept trying to get her to go to the light. And there was a gentleman named Tom, I think his name was coming through as, that was either holding her back or...
Yeah, because I think at one point she said, Tom doesn't want me to go or something like that.
Right. And they're yelling at Tom, Tom, let her go, and Tom, go to the light. And this went on for quite a while. And the women in the group that encircled the Frank's box up in the third floor in that back room, they were all getting into it, encouraging her and pleading for her to go to the light. And she was responding back. I mean, I heard a child come through and say, hello, and goodbye, and I see the light as clear as day in a child's voice.
That was weird.
Never. I've never experienced anything like that before.
We've been doing this for a long time, and I've never experienced any kind of interactivity like that. And it all came through the Frank's box, and the responses were just as if another person was in the room, a little girl, just yelling out. It was crazy.
And the clarity. I mean, literally, when I was on the stairs, I could hear at the other end of the room, it was literally something like, I can see the light.
Yep.
It was just...
She said, I see the light. I see the light. And then when, at the end, when they believe that she went through the light, she said, goodbye.
And there was no more talking through the Frank's box. It was just gone. Silence for the rest of the evening.
That was one for the record books.
Yeah, I think everybody got chills.
John had people praying up there.
Yeah.
I didn't have any of my equipment. Obviously, we were in the basement.
Right.
But I guess somebody does have a recording of it, so I'm anxious to...
Diane actually has a recording on her Tascam.
Okay.
So, and it came out really clear. So just to let you know, the Tascams are excellent audio recorders.
So we'll be selling that to some network at... No.
Hobart House.
No, I mean, usually we don't advocate deliverances or, you know, that's not anything that we ever do as a group, but...
It just happened.
Yeah, John kind of facilitated that, and John has done that before, and the questions and statements that he was asking and what the people were, you know, imploring, go to the light or whatever, the responses of the little girl were just completely 100% in line with what they were asking and what John was saying.
I could just see the skeptics tearing that one apart right now.
I mean, there
if
was
you,
literally...
If you witnessed that?
There was literally 20 people up there watching from the other room and listening to these recordings, and the emotional outpouring from the group of, you know, like 15 women that were there helping her along, it was incredible.
And any time a guy went near that table where that Frank's box was on, you heard that loud screech come through.
Yeah. And John was very quick to usher you out.
Get the hell out.
Come on.
Well, yeah, so that was our excitement at the Hulbert House. It was a very fun-filled, unusual weekend of paranormal activity.
But it was fun. I think
it was very fun.
I think people really felt that they got more than their money's worth out of it. There was a lot of activity going on. The social aspect of the event was great.
Yep.
It's interesting because all the people who came basically became friends or exchanging phone numbers and Facebook friend requests and all that kind of stuff before they left. So it was a small kind of community, and we all worked together as a team. It went very well. I was very happy.
I know I had fun, and I thank everyone who came out.
Absolutely.
Rich, do you want to give a quick plug to your next event there coming up in a few weeks before we go?
Yes, thank you. Coming up the weekend of July 21st, Jason Hawes and Steen Gonzalez from Ghost Hunters will be at Lilydale Assembly. If you're not familiar with Lilydale Assembly, check it out online at lilydaleassembly.com. It's a large spiritual community on the side of a lake. It's a beautiful little community outside of Dunkirk, New York. On Saturday and on Sunday, Jason and Steve will be doing a presentation as well as answering questions and signing autographs, and they'll have merchandise there as well. You don't want to miss this. They actually have a brand new presentation they put together. As you probably know, it used to be Jason and Grant, and Jason and Grant no longer are together on the show. Jason is still on the show, and Grant is off doing different things like a board game company that he's making quite successful. He's also in a band with his wife. So it's Jason and Steve. They have a brand new presentation. It's comical, as well as it's got some really cool evidence I've seen on their apparitions and everything that I did not see in the old presentation with Grant. So definitely check it out and go to lilydaleassembly.com to buy your tickets and come spend the weekend with us.
They do have good hot dogs.
They have the best hot dogs.
They got a great coffee shop, too.
Yeah, it's a cool place. If you haven't been to Lilydale, you got to check out Lilydale. Lilydaleassembly.com.
Go to Inspiration Point or Inspiration Stump. Is that what it's called?
Inspiration Stump, yes.
That was when I first discovered Timbits, too.
Timbit. That's a story for another show. So
there is a YouTube video out there about it. But
we'll see that on... We'll point people to that on a later show. But that's all for us for tonight. So for Paranormal Investigator Radio, I am Dr. Dave DeProspero.
I'm Peter Leonard.
And I'm Rich Nicodem, signing off. Have a great night.
Thank you for joining us, and we will see you in just a couple weeks.
Ati ma peta babka.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Paranormal Investigator Radio. Be sure to visit us online at paranormalinvestigatorradio.com. Until next time, happy hunting and stay spooky.